Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast from The Sober Club. I'm Genuinely Grace, and this is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. We'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there's inspiration from quitlet authors, experts, and sober heroes. Hi, this is Genuinely Grace. Welcome to the podcast. Happy New Year again. I know I've already said that. I hope you're settling in nicely to a new year and everything is going good for you. There's a lot of nice energy around, lots of stuff in the sober sphere, as it were. Lots of people getting into dry January. You may have seen one of the posts I did on Instagram that I love the message I got from one of the members in the Sober Club who said that she was trying on her sober shoes and just sort of trying out the fit. So a lot of people listening are going to be doing dry January, I'm guessing. So you'll be, I don't know, you know, a week and a half in or whatever. And, you know, the only real, well, there's lots of tips I can give you, but the big one is just keep going and plan ahead, plan everything. Do that whoop thing, you know, think about what is your wish? What is the outcome you want? What's the obstacle that is going to trip you up? Because there will be one, if not more. And how are you going to plan? What are you going to do to plan ahead? It so is all about the planning. If you just rock up to an event, then you'll be handed a drink before you know it. But if you plan ahead, it can change everything. It's been super exciting in our Sober Club because we've done our juice shot challenge and it's really good fun because I'm aware that not everybody wants to add a whole, you know, big old glass of juice to their diet, whatever their diet is. It may not be the right time. But adding in a kind of a little shot is just so easy. And yet it can make such a difference. And again, one member has said she's not even craving wine at all, even though she's only a few days in. The cravings have completely gone. And partly that is because she's putting in the good stuff. So it's always a great thing to do is make sure you eat really, really well. Sounds super simple, I know. But it really makes a difference getting that good nutrition straight to the cells. So if you are interested in hearing more about self-care and sobriety, I hope you can make the Mindful Drinking Festival. Those of you who can get to London, it's a free festival organised by Club Soda, of course. Laura was my guest last week on the podcast. 18th, 19th at the Truman Brewery in London, in East London. And I'll be speaking on the Champs Motivational Stage. So that's just like a cross at the little art gallery. And the time of my talk has changed. It's now 1:15, so it's 15 minutes earlier. Self-care and sobriety, and it would be just great to meet some podcast listeners. Please come and say hi. It'd be lovely to see you there. And then on Sunday I'm going to be hosting a panel on sober holidays and retreats, so really looking forward to that with Lauren from We Love Lucid, and Sober Dave will be on the panel, a whole bunch of others. And I'll be around most of the weekend, so it'd be fantastic to meet some people. If you're not sure whether you should go or not, then go, really go. It's a great event, masses and masses of choice of alcohol-free drinks to try out while you're there and sample and take home, and, you know, buy some, take them home. It really is incredible. You know, it kind of opens your eyes to a whole different world, really. So if you're new to it, do come. It's free to attend. You might have to book some of the sessions, but in my show notes, if you look at my show notes, I've given you the link there to their website. So that's the Mindful Drinking Festival. Really look forward to seeing you there. We've got our Champs retreat this weekend, for those of you lucky enough to be coming. Yay, you're going to have a fabulous time. And also I have another retreat just about to start talking about it. It's in May, 8th to 10th of May at Inner Guidance in Suffolk. That's going to be really cool. But anyway, for today, I'm so pleased that I got to interview Lisa and Alex from The Sober Experiment. They're doing such great work, such fun gals. They've got a podcast, of course, and they're doing some amazing stuff in this space and really flying the flag for the sober curious in the north of England. So check out Lisa and Alex.
Welcome, gals. How are you?
Thank you for having us. Yes, thank you. Very well, thank you.
It's so lovely to chat to you. I've seen some of your stuff and I've seen your absolutely meteoric rise to fame. It's absolutely amazing. It's not that long, is it, since you kind of started doing your various podcasts and various things that you do. So yeah, it'd be great to hear a bit about your story. So I don't know who wants to go first. You work that out between you. And okay. just a kind of potted, you know, sober history. And then we'll get on to all the amazing stuff you're doing now.
Okay, so I'm Alex. My sober story kind of begins a long, long way back, really. I was quite heavily influenced as a child in terms of alcohol. My father was an entertainer and a club singer, and my mum and dad owned pubs. So from a very, very young age, that's what I knew. And it wasn't that I was particularly subjected to it. That was my normal.
That was the norm, yeah.
Yeah, that was just my normal. So everywhere, you know, I went as part of the guitar and the amp and the boot. You know, I was just hauled. I used to sit in dressing rooms.
Yeah.
And yeah, drinking was just everything to me, really, and everything around life. And, you know, our parents, my man and my sister's parents, we used to have a glass of wine from quite a young age, really, with our Sunday lunch. And it, I guess it's just how smoking's gone in a lot of ways, that it wasn't deemed the abnormal at that point. So and then because of that, I worked in a pub. A lot of my friends were drinkers. All my social life revolved around alcohol. And then over time, it got me, really. It actually started to get the better of me. I lost a baby at 12 weeks, just over a year ago. And I guess that was my turning point, really, because I started to drink quite heavily after that to soothe myself and to kind of numb the pain. I just realized that, you know what, I can't carry on like this. It was starting to impact on my marriage. It was starting to impact on my mood. And Lisa had already gone sober. So I'd already seen that shift in her and just thought, you know what, I want more for myself. I'm a very capable, intelligent person, and I'm ruining my life with it, really.
Fascinating. Yeah. Okay, we'll talk some more about that in a bit. Lisa, tell us your story then.
I'm just trying to, mine started quite early on as well, and the same with Alex. I was brought up in pubs as well. In fact, we met through our parents, didn't we, in pubs. So it was a big, big part of our childhood. It was just the norm that people drank. Yeah. I suppose what got me to the point where I wanted to stop, I was going through a bit of a marriage breakdown. I've got three teenagers, and they were going wild. I'm not gonna lie, they were going wild. And I'd got to this point, I think, where I was seeing it as my time. So every time it came to weekend, I was like, right, that's it, it's my time now, I'm going out. And I was a big, big binge drinker. Well, I'd become a big, big binge drinker. And I used to get really, really bad anxiety, which led into my whole week. I just found that I was struggling with the anxiety side of it, and I just thought something has got to change. You know, I'd gone on a Sunday night, I'd gone out to Sunday club, as we used to call it, and I didn't go to work the next day. I was getting to the point where uniforms weren't ready for school, so I was holding down a really good job, and my kids were going to school, but I wasn't prepared, and it was really affecting everything. I just knew something had to change.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because with both of you and with me, you know, it's exactly the same. We were just normal drinkers. You know, we weren't what would be classically called alcohol dependent or at rock bottom. And of course, now we know, don't we, that there's this whole spectrum of grey area drinkers, which is what we were. But it's really fascinating because, you know, in that, if you grow up in that kind of pub scene, and as you say, everything's normal and your parents drink and this and that, I don't know what the answer to this is. I'm not even sure it's a question. It's just a kind of comment, really, where I'm just kind of thinking to myself, you know, isn't it interesting how some people just rock through their whole life like that? They'll always drink. Maybe they have an off switch and I don't have an off switch. Or maybe they'll always just be miserable. I don't actually know the answer to that. I'm just kind of putting it out there. I mean, I suppose the question would be to you, Alex, what happened for you then? I mean, was anybody else in your family, if it's not too personal to share, did anyone else's situation tip up? Or is everyone else in the family genuinely a happy social drinker?
Well, my dad was definitely alcohol dependent, and I mean, he's no longer with us for the last 10 years. He actually ended up dying of heart disease and cirrhosis of the liver, but he'd been sober for 10 years. So actually, my mum had been very, very supportive of that when my dad was told to stop drinking. She'd also gone a very long time without drinking. Everybody in my family, my mum, my sister, my auntie, my cousins, everybody enjoys a drink. As I enjoyed a drink. Now, it's not for me to pass judgment, and I won't, on what I think of that. But if anything, I wouldn't say they were unsupportive, but I think they were quite surprised, because I was probably deemed the sensible one and the one who probably doesn't need to stop in, you know, in terms of social terms. Yeah. If anyone said, oh, who's got a drink problem in our family, I don't think that they would think that was me. And they would probably be quite surprised. So when I actually said, you know, I'm stopping drinking, it was, well, surely you can just have it just cut down, or just have a few. And I was like, well, no, I can't actually. And I, you know, I'm recognizing this myself, that it's not that I can't do it. I don't want that constant argument in my mind where I have to choose between I've got to stop now or am I going to go a whole hog? And I think that because of the two of us being so close, and we have been since, you know, early teens, the problem was that when one of us had phone up, if we'd not been together and say, oh, I've done this or I've said this, we would excuse each other. So we were actually normalizing it even further. So no, I mean, I wouldn't say anyone was massively unsupportive, but I don't feel I was massively supported either. My husband, he stopped with me.
Okay, yeah, that happens a lot, and that's great if it does happen, doesn't it? Because it must be it's so difficult for people who've got, you know, a partner who carries on drinking, and then they've lost their drinking buddy, and that can be really awkward. What about you, Lisa? What's your kind of scenario with sort of background and other friends and family and their kind of drinking behaviours?
Well, it's funny you should say that about the husband and the lose the drinking partner, because that's kind of exactly what happened to me. Okay. My husband is now actually 8 months sober, which is brilliant. And he's kind of gone down a different route than I did to, you know, for his sobriety. But we don't actually live together. so it's a little bit complicated. But he definitely felt like he'd lost his drinking partner. And I think when I kind of made the decision to stop drinking, it hugely, hugely affected him. And it magnified how much he was actually drinking at that time as well. So it did cause quite a lot of problems. And I think at first he kind of tried to stop because I'd stopped, and it wasn't for his reason, you know, for his
own. Yeah, you have to have your own reason, don't you?
Well, that's it, yeah. So he's found his own reasons since. So, yeah, it was like that. My family is really tiny. So there's literally just me, my three children, and my mum. Like, we don't really have any other family. So my mum was a regular drinker, and I used to go to my mum's and have a drink, and then she'd go to bed, and then I'd go off out because I'd not had enough. But she's gone sober now too, and she's 14 months sober, and I'm so proud of her.
That's amazing.
We're changing.
That's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. we are between us all. We are. Yeah. It really is amazing. That's great. Because you do, because, you know, you're right. You do. You shine a little light. You just quietly, you're not evangelizing the whole time, but you just shine a little light. And I can imagine your conversations in the early days when one of you had given up and the other one hadn't. You know, I can imagine that. So starting with you then, Lisa, obviously, when you made your decision after one of your, you know, nightmare hangovers kind of thing. What was the, I'm guessing that you'd had periods before where you'd stop for a bit, maybe when you were pregnant or whatever. So looking back, what do you think was the really deciding factor this time that made that your last day one?
I toyed with the idea for a long time. And I always thought, I would look at other people and think, oh, they drink way more than me, so I must be all right.
So it must be all right, yeah.
Yeah, and then when I had hangovers or I did stupid things, I would ring Alex that would then tell me I was all right, and that was completely normal, and everybody did these ridiculous things. I knew a friend of mine actually had done a 100-day challenge, and it had really fascinated me. Another friend of mine had done a year, and I remember thinking, I
really want to do that. And I never really voiced it, but I was like, I really, really wish that I could do a year, because there's got to be something else. So I toyed with it for quite a while. And then in my hungover state, I'd been recommended a couple of books. And my first one was The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober by Catherine Graham.
Fabulous, love it, yeah.
And I literally, I got it on Audible because I couldn't see to read.
I've been there.
Like, blazed with my hangover, with my earphones in, listening to this. And that feeling of, oh my God, I'm not on my own. Somebody else feels like this.
Yeah.
And I think I really knew early on that it was going to be a permanent. I told everybody it was going to be 100 days, but I knew it was going to be more. And I looked at it as a little bit of an experiment, to be honest. I just thought, what is life like without it? Who am I without it? How do I deal things without it? Because I've always used drink without realizing.
Exactly.
Being 13 to deal with every single emotion that
you had to relearn who you even were. Actually, fascinating, isn't it? I always think it's really fascinating when people start that young, to because they find out who they are all over again as an adult. You know. Amazing.
Yeah, and it was such a big part of my identity. Anybody that knew me knew that I liked to go out and have a drink. Yeah, all my birthday cards would have like wine, gin, you know, everything on it. So it was such a big part of me. And I really did have to kind of learn who I was without it.
Yeah, amazing. And you're so right. And that's exactly what I try and encourage people towards is look for the positive reasons. Like, why would you not, oh, I've got to give up because everything's so terrible and I'm the unlucky one who can't have a drink ever again, you know. But instead, look for, you know, as that fabulous book title says, the unexpected joy, you know, look for the benefits. And if you can catch sight of that, that's what makes all the difference, isn't it? So what about you then, Alex? I'm guessing that obviously you picked up on some Elisa's vibe, obviously. But when you finally got to your last day one, what was the catalyst for you that you knew that this was it?
What happened was I'd actually decided I was going to stop drinking, and I really meant it, having seen Lisa do the same. And then a week later, I found out I was pregnant with the baby that I miscarried with. So I kind of took my eye off the ball then and thought, oh, it's fine. I stopped reading the Quitlet and I stopped trying, really, because there was no way I would have ever drank in pregnancy.
Right.
And then after the miscarriage, I kind of reverted. Back to drinking. And then there was a huge argument between myself and my husband. I ended up throwing a sandwich at his head, and I know that sounds ridiculous, but it was
I think I heard you say that on a podcast.
and he said, you know, the next day, I'm not going to put up with this. And I guess that's the time where the ticking started. But in all honesty, I just woke up. I had this debilitating hangover to the point where I was sick, I was crawling round, I was hunched over, and I just phoned Lisa. I'd made a little video recording of myself. And I just said to myself, look at you, this has to stop, to myself. I sent it to her and she just said, read this. And it was actually This Naked Mind, wasn't it? Annie Grace, because I'm quite scientifically minded, so Lisa knew that I would relate to that.
Brilliant.
And that was it. And I just knew, like Lisa, within an hour of doing it, that I would not go back. I just knew.
That's a great idea, videoing yourself. Because, you know, most of us just don't. When I look back now, my God, what was I doing to myself? You wouldn't do this with anything else, would you? If you had some kind of food that made you ill, you wouldn't go, oh, I think I'll do it all again the next night. You'd never eat that again. None of us would. It is just... Honestly, when I look back, I can't get my head around it. I know. It is bizarre. Anyways, so was it ever, what apart from obviously picking up the Quitlet, what else did you both do to kind of, you know, make sure you reinforce that sobriety? Were you kind of straight into the various online groups and things, or was it ever an option for you to go to meetings or meet up with other people? What were your kind of sober tools, if you like?
Mine was definitely groups, Facebook groups and Instagram for me. I genuinely don't know what I would have done without them groups at the beginning, because I was so on my own with it. There was nobody that got why I was doing it. Nobody understood it. My kids were driving me bonkers. They thought I were going to turn into this boring mum. What they really meant was that they wouldn't get away with things anymore.
Yeah.
But the groups massively, massively help me, and writing things down.
Yeah.
I'm also, I know you mentioned that before about positive thinking, and you know, there's two ways to do it, isn't there? There's like, oh my God, I'm missing out on everything.
Yeah.
And that was never going to be me. I had to focus on all the benefits of it and all the amazing things that there is, because I just think there is so many amazing things about being sober. Mm-hmm. You know, the list goes on and on and on, and I really focused on all of them. And gratitude as well.
Yeah.
Like every morning, I've got affirmations on my mirror. I've got self-help books all over my house. Mm. But yeah, just really, really focusing on all the benefits is what helped me.
Yeah, definitely. And so it was never an option for you to go to AA or Smart Recovery or any of those kind of meetings. You want to just keep everything kind of online, yeah?
Yeah, just online. I just never fell. You know, there's a thing about AA, isn't there? And I know that it's amazing for people, and people have done really well with it. And I suppose in my mind, I just thought, and I see this differently now, but at the time I thought, oh, I'm not that bad. You know, that's how I saw it at the beginning. I have actually been to an AA meeting with a friend of mine, and I think they do absolutely amazing work. But no, for me, it was all online.
And presumably you followed the lead, did you, Alex?
I mean, I was really lucky, like I say, because my husband probably drank maybe once a month or less. But he said, I'm going to help you and I'm not going to drink. So that was immediate. I didn't even have to argue for that, even though I had thrown a sandwich at him. With Lisa as well, having a best friend that you can just pick up the phone and go, I'm struggling today. And it did happen. Actually, it happened the very day that I quit, the Monday. I'd never thought about drink on a Monday, ever. And Monday morning, wine pops in my head.
Yeah.
I did. I phoned her on the way to work and said, I don't know if I'm going to last the week. And she was like, you will.
Well, it's that thing of if you can't have it, you want it at the beginning. And it can change your mindset, I guess.
And then Lisa had done... by accident, because of the time she'd announced that she was doing the 100-day experiment, she'd not realised that she had holidays booked and events and all sorts, and just got on with it. So I thought, well, you know what, if she can do it, I can do it. So I went on holiday, I went to a wedding a week after that I'd stopped, I got up and danced a week after I'd stopped. Yeah, and it just, and then having each other, it does make life easier.
Yeah, so connection really is everything, isn't it? Actually finding that support. You know, I did it completely the wrong way and didn't tell anyone at all, apart from Claire Pooley. she's the only person I told. Bless her, she kind of looked after me for the first 3 months till I was brave enough to come out, you know, because I felt a sense of shame. What the hell's that about? Yeah. You know, amazingly enough, I didn't feel any shame when I was gaining the booze, but when I stopped, because I suppose you shine a light on it, don't you? And I was just so fearful of what others might say, shining the light on, you know, the fact that I had a, in inverted commas, problem.
Yeah.
Anyways, so moderation was never an option for you,
either
of you.
No.
Because you know you don't have an off switch, right?
All or nothing.
Yeah, we're both the same. And when we're all or nothing in exactly the same way as well. So I will always say, right, we'll go and have lunch. We'll definitely go home at 4 o'clock. We'll definitely leave at this time. And three in, and we would both together. It wouldn't even be anybody's idea particularly. We'd be on shorts, we'd be out. We were staying till 5 in the morning, and that was that. Our husbands, they both independently have said to us, you know, we just used to dread when you got together, because we just knew it was a write-off that you'd go out together for lunch and the whole weekend would there be a write-off. So
interesting. Was there ever, when you first got sober then, was there a sense of, oh my God, what am I going to do with all my time?
Some people,
you know, when you add up the amount of time you thinking about drinking, buying the drink, drinking the drink, recovering from the drink, it's a lot of hours. So did you actually kind of think, what the hell am I going to do?
Yeah, definitely.
Really?
I tried so much in the beginning as well. The time shocked me. Like, I kind of now wish I had that time back.
Because it
seems to have gone. But at the beginning, I was like, at the weekends.
Time stretches.
The weekends just seemed so long. Yeah.
So did you kind of introduce new hobbies or anything? You know, how are your lives different now, you know, in terms of actual things that you do?
we see each other a lot more, and we saw each other quite a lot anyway. But we do,
And you even remember it now.
Yeah, we remember it. We've done things like, you know, we went on a spa day together. We went to a Pride festival together. I wouldn't say in terms of our social life much has changed, because we still find it easy to go out together. We still find it easy to go into bars. Mm. We are both advocates of alcohol-free adult drinks. So we're quite happy to drink, you know, certain beers and so on.
Yeah.
So I would just say that rather than there being time doing different things, the time that we spend together is creative, it's innovative, and it's exciting time. We actually have genuine laughs, genuine
fantastic.
Fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And Lisa, you said that, you know, your kids at first were a little bit kind of cautious of what was going on. I think mine would have been if I'd told them. I just didn't tell them. What differences have you noticed? I mean, it is true, you know, you do become much more present as a parent, you know, very much so, whatever kids you know, whatever age your kids are. In fact, I've said several times on my podcast that's kind of really my one big regret, actually, is that I didn't do this sooner, you know, because when my kids were younger, I really do regret that, you know. But what have you found since, in terms of your kids, since ditching the booze? How has it affected them, if they have noticed? I mean, teenagers are in a world of their own, obviously mine are.
Yeah, no, they have definitely noticed. And they're really proud of me now, which is lovely, because they were scared at first. They saw it as fun, and they did get away with a lot more, like I said before. I did touch before, there was being a bit of a nightmare, and we've had quite a lot going on over the last 2 years without going into too much detail.
Yeah, yeah.
And I genuinely do not think I could have caught had I been drinking.
It's really important to stress that, actually, that the bad stuff, the difficult stuff in your life doesn't end. You just become a bit more resilient, don't you?
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I think it was a bit of a shocker that first year of not drinking. It was like, oh my gosh, has all this been going on? Yeah. But I'm a lot more present with them. We get to spend a lot more time together, and I just feel like I've got a lot more time. You know, like as teenagers, they want lifts here, there, everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
You become a taxi. Well, I wasn't really doing that, because I was waiting, oh no, I can't pick you up, I've had a glass of wine, and that might cause trouble with times they were coming home and things like that. Whereas now, they do use me as a taxi a lot more. But you know, we have some really good times together, and it's just made everything better.
Yeah. And what's your view in terms of helping teenagers, either of you, you know, helping young people and teenagers navigate booze? Because this is something that I actually don't really know how to handle this one. It's a difficult one, because you can't sort of railroad over your kids and say, right, well, I did it all wrong, so don't you go near a drop of alcohol, because clearly that, you know, they're going to go the other way. But you know, I've said lots of times on the podcast that I went to an event at my daughter's school, like an alcohol awareness thing, and they were doing this ridiculous nonsense about, do you think we should give sort of 12 and 13 year olds like a sip of wine to get them used to it? You know, like you were saying, when you can, like, for God's sake, you know, and I couldn't stop myself. I actually said, well, should we just change the word for heroin and then see how everyone feels about just a little bit of heroin to get them used to it? You know, it's just, so my question is, what's your view on how we navigate? I know there's never any one way, but how do parents navigate the whole thing of kids and teenagers and how they look at alcohol?
So I think for me, and I've got two teenagers as well, and a very young one, and the young one won't be a problem. I just think he will see this as his norm and probably not even want to do, but the others have experienced me drinking and me not drinking, and they are very curious about me not drinking, naturally curious. And the way that I've said is, you know, I believe, and I still believe, that alcohol will end up going the same way as nicotine and smoking has.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I've said to them is, look, we just need to educate you. We'll talk about the dangers, we'll talk about the risks, we'll talk about safe drinking. And we just have very open discussions about that. And then the way that I approach it with them, I say, okay, well, if you want to try alcohol one day, that will be your choice when you're old enough to try. But why would you try? Explain to me what it will add to your life, and then we can talk about it. And they both started to really question that and go, you know what, no, you're much better now. And again, my son made me a little video, he's the eldest one, and he made me a little video to tell me how grateful he is that I've stopped drinking because he's seen a difference. And it's something that I said to him, just record me a video,
That's so sweet.
So I would say, from my point of view, I would never push my views on anyone, really, in terms of you will not. But yeah, I will tell them the truth about alcohol. Mm. I will give them the facts. I will give them a toolbox to deal with it. And they will hopefully make the right choices through my example.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So tell us about this great stuff that you're doing. Obviously, you have your podcast and your various meetups and things. But I'm also really interested in, I read that you're doing some work with businesses. So tell us how that works.
We're really excited about this. We're starting this in January.
Yeah.
And what our idea is we will be going to businesses and we're offering, it's like a two-hour interactive, fun session about alcohol awareness.
Right.
So we've worked out that 89,000 people across the UK are turning up to work every day with a hangover.
Wow.
That's one in 10 people twice a week.
My goodness. Wow.
That's a lot of hangovers.
Yeah. That is, I can see why the head of HR or whatever might be really interested in that, because that's going to be affecting the level of work being done, isn't it? Definitely.
Yeah, it's productivity, but it's, I mean, if you think about things like, you know, somebody not being able to do their job, the cover needed, they might not even turn in. And then if they don't turn on a Monday, they might do what I used to do and say, oh, well, it's cold, but I need to make them believe it's a cold, so I have to stay off Tuesday as well.
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing. So we've worked out, and this is at the very minimum level, that if it was just a workforce of 10 and one of them was turning up once a week hungover, which is what statistics suggest, and they were earning minimum wage, that is losing a company nearly £7,000 a year.
Yeah.
So, and that's just average on minimum wage. So we're going into workplaces and we are feeding them these facts, and we're engaging the workforce through the presentation in their own 30-day sobriety experiment.
Fantastic. So
there's two kind of slants to this. Obviously, you've got the big team ethos thing where everybody gets on board and wants to support each other to do it, but then you're also inadvertently saving the company money. And we're finding that people who do our 30-day experiment, we've just had four this week completed 100 days.
Wow.
And they went, we're not going back. And they were people who were with us from the start of us setting up the sober experiment, and they intended to do 30 days and they've done over 100 now.
That's brilliant. And I'm guessing as well as the productivity of course, from the perspective of the, the employer, of course, the massive benefit is that, you know, long-term people are going to have less sick leave because of the, their stress levels will be greatly decreased, and anxiety and all the rest of it, because, you know, as you guys well know, it may not even be that people are not going to work or not performing well because of a hangover. It might just be that low level anxiety that I'm sure you've heard me say before, but I didn't realize how anxious I was until I wasn't anymore, you know. And I'm sure that that's the case for so many people, that they're performance is always a little bit under par, and they're probably reporting with all kinds of issues that actually, if you were to really unpick it, comes back to alcohol. So you know companies are going to benefit massively. It's not just the hangover days, is it? I'm sure you've noticed that. Well, obviously you've noticed that. I mean, but what's your experience of that kind of link between alcohol and anxiety and mental health issues?
Yeah, so I think both of us have got our own kind of slant on this. So, I mean, I think the first thing to realise is that reported numbers of mental health cases in the country are like one in four every year. So there's a lot of undiagnosed mental health problems because a lot of people are self-medicating with alcohol. So you've got that issue where it's never even been disclosed. But then, you have got the people who's, you know, what came first, the mental health problems or the alcohol.
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, I know now, I personally was numbing out my anxiety. I am a naturally anxious person, but that's good. I'm learning to deal with it and I'm coming to terms with it. The other way around with Lisa, I'll let you speak about yours. So.
I was the same as you, really. I didn't realise how anxious I was until I wasn't anymore.
Yeah.
So when I was drinking, I wouldn't even answer my phone in the week, which, you know, if I didn't know the number, I'd be like, oh, who's that? I can't answer that. What shall I say to them? And I would go through this like cycle. So yeah, I didn't realise either until afterwards. Yeah. So I do still get anxiety myself. I'm just really aware of it now.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, I really wish you well in this in the work that you're doing. It's so exciting. It's brilliant to be, you know, spreading this message. So tell us how we can find out more about you then and check out the work that you're doing.
So we have a website. It's www.soberexperiment.co.uk. You can email us. soberexperiment@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on LinkedIn.
We're on everything.
So can anybody do your experiment then?
Absolutely. So we're quite happy for people to join up with our Facebook group. It's a really, really nice environment on there, isn't it? There's some lovely people. And we would actively encourage that everybody joins up, just like any other group really that's online. So yeah, we've got individuals, but then this workplace thing's going to bring the teams on board as well.
Yeah.
So there's lots of places to find us. We're right at the beginning of our journey, really. And as you say, this has happened for us. We're a bit kind of surprised and taken aback as to how fast it's happened for us.
Super exciting. It was exactly the right time, isn't it? It's exactly the right time for it to happen. And that's when things are right, they just fly, don't they? It's amazing.
Yeah.
Really amazing. Well, thank you so much for being my guest. Really appreciate it and wish you all the best. I'm sure we'll get to meet up at some point at something.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, I wish you all the best with everything you're doing. And thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lisa and Alex. Great to hear about the work that you guys are doing. I forgot to say, by the way, thank you so much for everyone who downloaded my e-booklet, Goodbye Wine Witch, Tips to Tame the Voice in Your Head. It's on Amazon and it was free for a few days. It's only 99p now. But lots of people went and did that and it went to number one on Amazon in a couple of the categories, which is absolutely amazing and quite funny because it's 13 years since I had my first Amazon number one best-selling book, Imperfectly Natural Woman, and all these years on, I get a little number one in a couple of the sections for this little free e-booklet. So it's great. Shows that there's some interest out there. So it's 99p now, or the equivalent in your country, and it's called Goodbye Wine Witch, if you want to search for it. It's just a humorous little booklet, really, with some lovely illustrations, courtesy of Rebecca Osborne. Thank you so much. They're really cool. It might just give you a little bit of motivation if you're in the early stages, or even if you've been sober for a while, but you still get those annoying cravings when the wine witch kind of flies in. So my self-care tip, I know I haven't done one for a while, even though I'm thinking about it all the time, is if you haven't yet, then set your intentions. Really, and I don't mean New Year's resolutions. I've said this before, I know. I definitely don't mean start resolving and beating yourself up about what you've not been getting right and what you feel you should do. But just set intentions of what you want. The vision boards are fantastic. They're so great for this. Just gathering together magazines, newspapers, pens, glue, scissors, obviously. And the important bit, turning your phone off, creating this vision board of what might be, bringing these pictures together of an aspect of your life. But there's lots of other ways to do a similar thing. But whatever you do, write it down. Write down your intentions and visualize, actually see them happening, because you have to be able to kind of feel it and imagine it to make it real. That's what I reckon anyway. So thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If you have any suggestions for me, please let me know who you'd like me to interview. I'm really excited that I'm going to be interviewing Catherine Gray, author of obviously Unexpected Joy of Being Sober, Unexpected Joy of Being Single, and now The Joy of the Ordinary. Now, this is just a great book. I've literally just got it. We're going to be interviewing Catherine on BBC Radio 2 as well. And she's such a talented writer. I mean, such a talent. So that's going to be great. Really looking forward to interviewing Catherine. I've also done an interview talking about setting intentions, which we were a few moments ago. I've also done an interview with a guy I've known for years, Nick Williams, who is he works with in leadership, really creative leadership. But he's been sober for so many years. And yet there are still elements of his life that he really puts down to that, making that choice to be sober. So it's a great chat about creativity, really. And how we can all find our creativity. And that becomes so much easier when you're not pouring wine on your head regularly or whatever your drink was. So whatever stage you're at, remember, you know, it doesn't matter to me how much you drink or how much you don't drink or how you got sober. I don't care about any of those things. There's absolutely no judgment. It's just about, for me, looking at the positive aspects of what's next for you, what's going to happen next. And in the Sober Club, that's very much what we do. So if you're interested in joining us, do please check it out, soberclub.com. Obviously, there's some blogs and stuff there as well. You can listen to all of the podcasts there. And if you drop us an email or sign up there, you can be on the list to get our various emails and bits and bobs. Follow me on Instagram, if you don't already, at Janie Lee Grace. And obviously, I'm on Facebook too. So look forward to connecting with you very soon. Have a great week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Janie Lee Grace. Please go to thesoberclub.com. Listen to more podcasts, read our blogs, enter our competitions, grab yourself a free PDF, Self-Care in Sobriety, and check out our online community,